A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love to say Utah is going to the Rose Bowl. Never gets old. Helmets off, is on. All right, sports fans, welcome to another episode of Helmets Off. I'm your host, Scott Mitchell. Got a fun show today. The University of Utah won the Pac-12 after being in the conference for 11 years. And there have been schools like Arizona that haven't ever won a championship. And Utah is now going to the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California. Oh, my goodness. We're going to talk about that today. Really excited about it. Of course, a crazy, crazy coaching carousel is happening. What does that look like? What does that mean? Where does that go? And then this old Kyler Murray, he might be the next latest, greatest, hottest quarterback to come around in the NFL. And surprising to think that he was just going to play 1 year in college and then go play baseball. Anyways, welcome to the show and let's get at it. All right. I have to go back. So Utah is playing in the Rose Bowl. It's the first time they've ever been to the Rose Bowl. It's only the second time Utah's ever played Ohio State. The first time was in 1986. And I remember it well because, well, I was there. Utah lost 64-6. Ohio State had not been playing very well to that point, not scored a lot of points in their previous games, and they really had been struggling. And so it was kind of an exciting they were looking to kind of avenge that, so to speak. And, well, they dropped 64 points on us at that time. It was my true freshman year, out of high school. I was like one game removed from our first game, I believe, was in Salt Lake, and there were probably 21,000 people. But so here I'm this kid, and I go to the Horseshoe, Ohio State. If you remember the logo, it was a turf field and it had a 10 in the middle of the field and then big on both sides. So it was the Big Ten at the time. And that was such an iconic image in college football. The game, there were 89,000 people. And here I'm from this small town in Utah, and I'm in front of the most probably iconic stadium situation. This is the Ohio State University. This is Woody Hayes. This is all college football is about. I remember just knowing, and I didn't play in the game. I was redshirting that year, so I was just an observer. But I remember how we just got it handed to us. We were terrible. We had lost before we ever started the game. We had no business being there. We could not compete against these guys, and they had some really good NFL players on their team. Chris Spielman was the linebacker. Chris Carter, Hall of Fame wide receiver, was there. William White was a really good DB. Eric Kumerow, who was a first round draft choice of Miami Dolphins, who was a teammate of mine for a few years. So this was a really, really good football team that we're playing. And at the time, I just remember, we'll never compete against this. The idea of going to the Rose Bowl at that moment was just impossible. I mean, it wasn't even, it was just so far, it wasn't even a thought we had. And I find it so fascinating about my life and about the transformation of the University of Utah. I mean, when I was at Utah, we barely had winning seasons. We weren't very good. And we never went to a bowl game. We never won a conference championship. We just were just average. And the idea of playing in the Pac-12 and being a Power 5 school, going to the Rose Bowl, it just didn't exist when we were there. And for me, at that moment, that first game, I'm at Ohio State. I don't think I can play with these guys. I had no idea if I could or I couldn't do it. And so we were just outmatched. And watching what happened with the University of Utah and the transformation and myself, it just gave me this realization of how powerful our ability to think is and how much of an impact it has on our performance. 4 years after that, I'm drafted and playing professional football, and I do it for 12 years. And those people that I didn't think I could compete with were now my teammates or people that I played against professionally and played against them and played as teammates together. And they were just like me. And when you broaden your horizons or your expectations or your perspective or your belief, man, it's amazing what can unfold to you. I just put it in my head that I was going to be a professional football player, and I did it. And I know I had the ability to do it physically, but I also developed an ability to do it mentally, and that was probably 10 times more important. And as I've watched the University of Utah unfold, it's been a fun thing to see, because that belief hasn't always been there. And you look back, and Ron McBride really started to kind of turn the corner. But Urban Meyer coming here, and the irony of all of it is Urban Meyer went to Ohio State and won national championships at Ohio State, and yet he was at Utah. And he brought a different mindset. He brought a different mindset, a different expectation to this football program. And I think when you start to kind of change your expectation, change the way you view yourself, you start attracting different people and different opportunities. And Urban Meyer did that at Utah. And he was only here for a couple of years, but man, I think he lost maybe a game in 2 years. And he just kind of started people seeing you can be bigger, you can be more. And of course, Kyle Whittingham was one of his coaches. And when Utah got in the Pac-12, it was ugly. I guarantee you that Utah did not think they could win Pac-12 championship. I guarantee you they, because you could see it. You would see the team find a way to lose big games in November. They'd find a way to self-destruct. They'd find a way to go back to the reality that they really perceived themselves at, and that was not winning. It was not winning. It was not winning. And there were so many opportunities to do it. If you remember a few years ago playing Oregon, and Oregon was like one of the top dogs in the country and playing at Autzen Stadium. And I think Utah scored like 60 points against Oregon, that was like one of the top teams in the country. And you're like, well, why don't you guys just do that every week? And you heard Coach Whittingham say, man, we knew we had to throw everything at them. And I'm like, well, why don't you throw everything at them every single week? And you could just see the program just wasn't ready mentally to just say, we can do this. We can do this. We can be Pac-12 champions and go to the Rose Bowl. Playing USC, Utah, I think, was ranked in the top five in the country at the time. And Travis Wilson throws three interceptions to the same guy, and you're just scratching your head going, you threw him right at the guy. Or Troy Williams having an opportunity to convert a two-point play to win the game, and he's got a wide receiver wide open in the end zone and just doesn't see him, and and Utah loses and can't, and Utah can't seem to find a way to beat USC at USC. And again, USC is kind of the flag bearer, the standard bearer of excellence in the Pac-12. And Utah just didn't have the mindset or belief we belong with this program and that we can beat USC in the Coliseum in Los Angeles. And I've watched up until this year, two Pac-12 championship games, one against Washington and one against Oregon. And the one against Washington, you could tell that Utah just did not expect or believe they could win that game. And somehow they found a way to lose it. And then a couple of years ago playing Oregon, and all Utah's five in the country. They win this game, they're going to be in the college football playoffs, and they just can't seem to get it together. Now, this year, man, I don't know what happened. I don't know if there was just we've finally been here enough. We know we can win. We've experienced it. We've gone through our growing pains, whatever, because some things started to change. And one of the things was players who were highly recruited flipped. And they didn't go to Ohio State. They didn't go to Texas. And they flipped and they came to Utah. Clark Phillips was an Ohio State guy and flipped at the last minute to Utah. And is the best DB on Utah's football team now, playing as a freshman on a team going to the Rose Bowl and having a significant impact. Utah didn't flip guys 3 or 4 years ago. They lost guys to places like Texas and Ohio State. Van Fillinger was going to Texas, 4-star guy. And he's now starting and doing a tremendous job. I mean, he's not a placeholder. He's an impact player on a team that's going to the Rose Bowl and won a Pac-12 championship. So somewhere along the way, Utah grew up. And players that weren't coming here started to. And players who were very talented came in and played. And there was a time when Utah started 9 freshmen on defense. And this team started the season out 1-2 and lost just horrendous games to BYU and to San Diego State. And really had no business losing those games, but they did. Your record is what it is, and they lost. And this was a team just floundering. So it was making strides. It was flipping players to come to the school. It was getting really good recruiting classes. And then the tragedies that hit the program. Now, how do you bounce back from that, really? I mean, most, it would be troubling. It would be really troubling. And you're just like, wow, this team has this tragedy happen. They have a bye week, and guess where they have to go play? The first game is at the Coliseum against USC. And you watch the game with a quarterback, by the way, who's never played in college football. He played half of a quarter against USC the year before in the COVID year and got hurt. So he's never really played in a college football game. And he's now your starter. And you got to go to USC where you've never won after the tragedy of one of your players, who this is the second tragedy in the span of about, 8-9 months, and you find a way to win. And then you just go on this run. This quarterback wins 9 of 10 games he plays in, beats the number 3 ranked team in the country and the number 10 ranked team in the country in the same year. And not only did they beat them, they destroyed Oregon. And I just remember going to the Pac-12 championship game and knowing that Utah was going to win. Like, I just was like, I don't even think this is going to be a close game. Everyone's like, oh, you know, you can't, it's hard to beat a team twice. And I was just like, no, Utah has their number. They're a better team, a far better team. And they're actually, their game plan against the quarterback, Anthony Brown at Oregon, was better than the first time they played him. And Anthony Brown, 13 games is not going to, or days is not going to just all of a sudden change. And they had his number, and they had Oregon's number defensively. So here you have this, this just massive turnaround in a season, and the turnaround has really been years, decades in the making, and it's just shocking to see how a team and a program really just had this meteoric rise, and it's fascinating now to hear Ohio State, who's never changed. Like, Ohio State, they've just been Ohio State all these years. This is what we do. We win national championships. We're a top five program in the country. We go to the college football playoffs. We get the best players in the country. End of discussion. And they're like, oh, we have to play Utah. And I'm telling you right now, Utah will win this game. They will win the Rose Bowl. They will win it because they truly believe that they belong. It's not enough for Utah to get to the Rose Bowl. That wasn't the goal. It's not the goal. They're not just happy to be there. This program has turned a corner. Right now in the Pac-12 conference, the best program is the University of Utah. Next season, Utah will be a top 10 team preseason, and they'll be an early favorite to be like a playoff team next year. And they will be the team to beat in the Pac-12. And to know, because I broadcast the football games on the radio, to know that I'm going to the Rose Bowl. I'm going to the Rose Bowl is the most amazing statement I think I could ever make. And I value it so much because I was there the first time. And I was there when no one believed. And I'm now standing here watching this, and I've witnessed this transformation of how in your mind you can change so much of the outcome of your life. It's why I love sports. It's why I've loved it my whole life. Not about winning and about all of the whatever, the fame, the notoriety. It's been about finding out who I am through sports, what I'm made of, what I'm capable of. And sports was an amazing vehicle to teach and to provide the experience and opportunities to find who I am. And really anyone. I mean, and I love that about sports. Love that. All right, we're going to take a break, come back. And of course, I went really long on that, but I don't care. It was cool. College coaching craziness. If you're going to get a good coach, you're going to poach him. And we'll see what happens with some of these coaching opportunities coming up. All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is Helmets Off. Scott Mitchell here, and we're going to talk about college coaching craziness, I guess. Mario Cristobal, who's a Miami guy, goes back to the University of Miami. Had a discussion earlier this week, which is a better job, Miami or Oregon? A lot of people said, oh, Oregon is a better job. Why the heck is he going to Miami? Miami's terrible. Miami's awful. Mario Cristobal is a Miami guy. He's a Miami native. He understands how amazing Miami can be. You have the state of Florida. The University of Utah recruits in the state of Florida. Everyone recruits in the state of Florida. And if you can become the program, the image, the like what Miami was, you will get the very best players in the state of Florida. End of discussion. No question about it. You'll get the best players. And that's what Miami can be. And Oregon by itself is not a hotbed of talent. Oregon gets its talent from California. Yeah, there's some kids in Oregon, but most of them, they're not locally grown players. Shoot, they get players from Utah. They get players all over the place. And Nike's a world brand and has a tight tie, and that helps Oregon in its recruiting massively. I have no question that helps. So yeah, Miami was a bold move and one that Mario Cristobal, I think, probably felt extremely comfortable taking. But Oregon is not a chump change job, you know. So what happens at Oregon? And then, of course, you've got Brian Kelly, who just up and left Notre Dame. And like he has been so successful at Notre Dame, but the one success he hasn't had is winning a national championship. And I think underneath it all, I think Brian Kelly goes, I can't win a national championship at Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame's so overrated every year. They get killed in the playoffs. They don't play anybody. I don't know that they really recruit and really get the top tier players. Players want to go to an SEC school. Players want to go to a Big Ten school. They want to be in that conference. They want to be guaranteed they're going to be in the playoff discussion. The tradition of Notre Dame has kind of been whitewashed with everything that's happened in college football just the whole tradition of everything. There's no tradition in college football anymore. It's not. And Notre Dame is kind of probably needs to come to the forefront if they really want to. They really need to be in a conference. I just believe that. I don't care. It's just Notre Dame is irrelevant to me. And I think Brian Kelly knew that. And he goes, well, why go to LSU? I mean, LSU, it's like, you know, you got to compete against Alabama. You got to compete against Georgia. You're going to have Texas. You're going to have Oklahoma. Texas A&M is kind of a challenge. If Florida wakes up and decides it wants to be good again, it has that potential. But why LSU? LSU is one of the top jobs. You've had three different coaches, Les Miles, Nick Saban, and Ed Orgeron, all win national championships at LSU recently. And in a span of Notre Dame's 1-0 and had every opportunity. I mean, Brian Kelly's done a tremendous job there, but I guarantee he probably reached his ceiling there. And I'm sure, you know, $100 million, you know, probably helps, you know. I mean, it's just like, it's the same thing with Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley knows I'm going to go be a smaller fish in a big pond in the SEC. And I can go to USC and become basically not having really any competition. No offense to Utah, because Utah right now is there. But can they compete against USC if it's really unleashed? They can't. They can't. And here I'm talking about mindset and all that stuff. And maybe they can. I don't know. But USC Unleashed is a beast. It's a real beast. So what about Oregon? And really, if Phil Knight goes, I'll pay for whatever, because that's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to pay $95 to $100 million, and you're going to have to go poach someone. And there's this talk of Kalani Sitake from BYU. It's not a sexy pick. Oregon has to be the same kind of pick that you have at USC. It had to be a flashy, relevant, big name. And if you couldn't do that, you couldn't have that. There's just no way that Oregon can afford to have probably a really good coach. Kalani would be a really good coach at Oregon, but he's not going to be the sexy pick they're looking for. Nike's flashy. This is Oregon that changes their uniform at halftime. And they don't ever wear the same uniform combination or the same helmet. It's all about, promotion and glitz and the bling and the wow factor at Oregon. Everything is. And so you've got to have this hip, vibrant out there. And, Kalani's just not the guy. Kalani would be amazing. Kalani fits in so well at BYU. He just needs to stay at BYU. And he can stay there as long as he wants. So maybe it's Dave Aranda from Baylor. I mean, that's probably the biggest name, the name that they could, with all of the ties that they have as far as like athletic director and the relationship between, and Dave Aranda is a West Coast guy and recruited, California. He understands everything. Probably the best guy and he's done amazing at Baylor. But it's a tough thing, or you're Oregon, and you just look around the country and you just say, what guy maybe is the biggest name that we could absolutely pick away from where we are? I don't know. I mean, Mel Tucker was kind of a hot pick recently, and he hadn't really done a whole lot. He hadn't done a lot. He finished third or fourth in the Big Ten. That's it. But he got hot, he got relevant, and got a lot of money. It's changed. I mean, coaching, and so it's not, well, we're going to wait for this guy. I mean, the programs aren't even waiting anymore. They're just saying, off with their head and on with the next search. And they have to do it because of recruiting. I get it. But the poaching and the big dollar contracts are coming to college football. All right, we can take another break. We come back. Kyler Murray has the Arizona Cardinals at 10-2, best team in the NFL. Is he the real deal? Welcome back. Helmets off. Scott Mitchell. Last segment of the day. Fun things to talk about. Rose Bowl. Utah's playing Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. Of course, the changes in coaching carousel, and then this NFL deal, Kyler Murray, and what he's doing is just remarkable. But what his team is doing is even as remarkable. Cliff Kingsbury is remarkable. No, how he got picked as a coach and what he's done, because it's Arizona. I mean, that's the thing. I think everyone goes, but it's Arizona, right? And they're just perennial. I know they've been to a Super Bowl or two, and they've had a few years where they've done well, but historically and most of the time, they don't play well. They find a way to just get in their way and bomb. And it's kind of a graveyard for people to go to type of thing. But Kyler Murray, to me, I would say Baker Mayfield was probably a guy I would have expected to be a better pro than Kyler Murray. I didn't believe Kyler Murray's ability to throw the ball, his arm strength, his accuracy. I mean, he was an amazing runner, still is an amazing runner. But this guy throwing the football has been just spectacular to me. That's the thing. That's the difference to me. And I think of all of the quarterbacks playing today, like, he's the scariest. Jalen Hurts is probably equal as a runner. Maybe not. I mean, because Kyler Murray is just so darn fast. But Jalen Hurts can't throw the ball like Kyler Murray. And in the NFL, you really have to be able to throw and make all the throws. I say this all the time, and I'm just telling you, it's just true. These defenses are so good, and they'll figure out what you can't do. Taysom Hill with the New Orleans Saints can't throw the football, but he can run. Lamar Jackson is a guy very much like Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray might be a better pure passer than Lamar Jackson. It really jumped off the table with me with Kyler Murray. I did not think that he would. I really thought he would be a guy last a couple of years, run around a lot, never figure out how to throw the ball in the pocket, and he would just be a flash in the pan. And his ability to do everything makes him almost indefensible. I mean, they'll figure out a way possibly to slow him down a little bit, but he's just really good. I think of Patrick Mahomes is not a runner. Patrick Mahomes is a thrower, and he'll run out of necessity. He'll extend plays by scrambling in the pocket and making just crazy throws that no one can make, even Kyler Murray. But Kyler Murray is a massive, massive run threat. And I want to believe that people have said, look, if you want to have longevity, if you really want to stay in the NFL, then you really need to know how to throw first. And I know Lamar Jackson's figuring that out and is, you know, doing a pretty good job of it. Because after a while, just taking those shots on your body is really difficult. And Kyler Murray's missed some time this year because you just expose yourself and you just don't need to. You just don't. But it'll be fascinating to see how this season ends up. And I mean, the Arizona Cardinals may be the team to beat. I always thought it was the Los Angeles Rams in the NFC and, of course, Tampa Bay. But tell you what, Kyler Murray in Arizona is going to be a tough out. Well, speaking of out, we're out. We're out of time. Helmets Off is now off. Thank you for tuning in. Find us on Facebook at The Helmets Off Podcast, Twitter at The Helmets Off Show. Until then, we'll see you then.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.